Hi, everyone. This is Alicia Halliday, and this is the ASF Weekly Science Podcast. Thank you for tuning in this week. The title is Genes and Environment Goes Together Like Aging and Retirement. The roles of genetics in the environment in autism can be estimated looking at twins, those that are either identical or monozygotic, or twins that are fraternal or dizygotic. Identical twins come from the same embryo that splits into two. Fraternal twins, on the other hand, are just two different embryos that happen to be in the uterus at the same time. Genetics is 100% the same in identical twins, but only 50% the same in fraternal twins. For the most part, prenatal environment of identical twins is the same, and for fraternal twins, it is also the same. So statistically, you can estimate the influence of genetics in the environment by comparing the variability in a specific trait, for example, brain size or brain region size or other estimates of brain characteristics, by comparing identical twins to fraternal twins, both sharing a common environment, but by differing in genetic influences by 50%. You plug this information into an analysis software, and this sort of estimate has been calculated to determine whether or not autism in general is more genetic or more environmental, and it has also been used in other psychiatric disorders. In the study I want to talk about today, they looked at twins that both had autism, or one had autism and the other did not have autism. Sometimes the twins were identical, and sometimes the twins were fraternal. When one twin has autism and the other does not, it's called discordant. When both twins have autism, it's called concordant. So they looked at identical twins that both had autism, or one where one had autism and one did not. They did this the same with fraternal twins that only share half their DNA, so the estimates for genetics were about half. They make estimates for genetics, and then whatever is left over is considered environment. Everything has to total to 100%. So they put all these into a structural equation, and they figured out at how much of the differences in brain shape and size and the particular regions involved in autism were influenced more by genetics or environmental factors. They also had a comparison group of those without autism, typically developing kids, to look at what brain regions in general, forget autism, are more influenced by genetics and which were influenced by the environment or which was both. I realize this is all so complicated and the details can be really boring, but stay with me for a few more seconds. These twin studies are able to separate the roles of genetics, a common environment, and a unique environment in identical twins who both have autism, identical twins where one has autism, fraternal twins who both have autism, and fraternal twins who only one has autism. There was a statistical equation used to determine the role of genetics in different brain structures based on the fact that identical twins share 100% of their genetics and the environment, and fraternal twins share 50% of genetics and 100% of their environment. These are estimates, remember, not absolute numbers, and they're based on modeling. In this particular study that looked at brain structures in multiple areas, what did they find? Well, for the most part, across brain areas, brain development was mostly based on genetic factors. We knew all that pretty much, or there would be no genetic markers associated with brain development, and there are. The exception to this rule was brain curvature, or how the brain is curved on the outside. Curvature in this study was primarily associated with environmental factors. And actually, this was also the case in typically developing people. In fact, it's the case a little bit more so in those with autism. In other words, the genetic component for curvature, which is typically low in typically developing individuals, was higher than those with ASD. It's known that factors which influence curvature are dependent on the environment, so what's going on? It could be that high genetic influence of the development of some brain regions make curvature less susceptible to environmental influence. In other words, it's an interaction. Now environment is being less influential because the genetics are so strong. Unfortunately, it should only be so simple as these large sweeping statements. We know that saying the brain is somewhat irrelevant in autism. It's important, of course, and researchers in the media use the word brain because who really cares about every details of every region and every area? However, I'm going to mention some exceptions to this rule on this podcast. The high genetic influences depended on specific circuits, and this role of genetics on brain development was not a global phenomenon. In fact, cortical thickness was more dependent on the environment than genetics. The composition of different cells in the cerebellum was also more influenced than the environment than genetics was in autism twins. Remember, these numbers that presented in the paper were estimates and they're not perfect. I consulted additional researchers to comment on the paper, and one had cautioned about the combination of a small sample size combined with this complex mathematical model. By using the particular statistical technique they use, where fraternal and identical twins are compared this way, it's possible that the results may have unintentionally or accidentally overestimated the role in the environment because the role of the genetics was underestimated. Now, it's entirely possible, but not the focus of this podcast. The study demonstrates that both genetics and the environment are important, and that's what I want the takeaway to be. Autism is largely driven by genetics. There's no way around that, not just brain structure, but autism-related behaviors. Last year, Ami Klin and John Constantino found that paying attention to social scenes is something that's highly determined by genetics, both in kids with autism and those without autism. And this was something they also determined from twin studies. However, there is room for the environment. In fact, the environment may play a bigger role than we thought. In all of these studies, however, the environment is very broad, which is a good thing. We need to be open-minded. But in animal models, you can get very, very specific. And scientists did get very specific this week in a collaborative study from the University of Washington that looked at a specific environmental factor of diesel fuel exhaust. When we think of the environment in human studies, we have to be very broad. It's not individual things, it's mixtures. We're never exposed to just one thing at any particular time, either medical, toxicological, or pharmacological. But in animal models, you can isolate some of these things to study these individual factors. The tricky part about animal models is autism is a human condition, and mice and rats, at least, do not have autism. You can recreate some of the features of autism with genetic mutations or sometimes environmental challenges or both, but it is what it is. There are also ethical limitations to studying humans with autism, and animal models provide invaluable insight into the mechanism by which autism occurs, when, and as well as being able to address some experimental questions that are not possible in humans. It's apples and oranges, not different types of apples. Science needs both types of research. We already know that air pollution, including components of diesel fuel exhaust, have been shown to be associated with an increased risk of autism in people. This has been shown in multiple studies all over the world. But there are two big questions. First of all, air pollution is bad for so many reasons. What can we do about it? And two, what is it about air pollution that causes this increased risk? Now, number two is prime for animal studies. How does air pollution affect the developing brain to lead to autism symptoms? What genes are turned on and off? What pathways are affected that specifically lead to autism rather than the other dozens of issues that air pollution causes? There are a few ways to go about this. Scientists can see all the things that air pollution does in the brain multiple times during development, and then sort them out. In this case, there's no specific idea or theory, it's just exploratory. But probably a more efficient way is to look at specific genes or other brain development markers that are associated with autism and see if there's any convergence in animal models. This way, there's a theory, and that theory can be tested. Recently, the theory that diesel fuel exhaust exposure in pregnant mice is associated with dysregulation of a gene called Reelin was studied at the University of Washington. Now, Reelin is one of those genes that affects how brain cells project once they're born to become adult neurons, where they go in the brain, and how they influence cell-to-cell contact. So scientists were able to look closely at the brains in mice and see how the cells are connected and how the area of the cortex was structured. Researchers also wanted to know if diesel fuel exhaust led to similar immune molecule expression as seen in ASD. The scientists found not only did this exposure lead to the behavioral features similar to ASD, like repetitive behaviors, decrease in vocalizations, and social behavior deficits, this air pollution, which was specific to diesel fuel exhaust, led to cortical disorganization in the somatosensory cortex. This disorganization is also seen when mice are exposed during pregnancy to another exposure associated with autism, maternal immune activation. So here's the cascade. Diesel fuel exhaust leads to something called STAT3 activation, which then turns on something called DMNT1. DNMT1 is an enzyme which puts methyl groups on the DNA, turning on or off genetic activity. That enzyme also happens to regulate reelin activity. The change in reelin activity is probably what affects cortical disorganization. But what does cortical disorganization mean? I mean, is it similar to that seen in autism? Well, thanks to tissue from the Autism Brain Net, this question can be answered. Different types of cells can be identified through different dyes to the cells, and some cells were in the wrong layers. This disorganization, in fact, is very similar to what's seen in autism. It's not as severe and certainly not as profound as some of the genetic models of autism. However, diesel fuel exhaust did copy some of the neuropathological features associated with autism. There are other features of autism that should be studied in animal models. There are lots of animal models to study, but do they show any similarities across these models? Is there something across these different models to say all of these things are part of autism? Well, now there is. Another new research study just this week looked at electrical activity in the brains of different strains of mice with different genetic mutations, which have all been associated with autism. Remarkably, they show a similar pattern of brain activity. That is, they have an altered EI ratio, meaning the times that they're turned on, excitation or E, are more often that they're turned off during inhibition or I. That's probably pretty simplistic, but this sort of imbalance in turning on and turning off different brain circuits is also seen in people with autism. Too much excitation could lead to anything from sensory overload to seizures. Now, maybe the cells themselves are too excited, but what about the overall networks? Does too much activity in one cell lead to too much activity in the next, and so on, and so on? Normally, a feedback loop can turn down too much of this activity, so within multiple brain cells connected together, the effects of this overactivity are mitigated. However, in these animal models of autism, which may predict what's going on in actual human brains of people with autism, the answer is too little inhibition to these overexcited neurons leads to circuits which are just on too much of the time. The cells in the brains of people with autism cannot compensate back to what is normal. So would something that turns down the activity and actively inhibits these circuits be helpful? Maybe, but don't go out and put electrodes in your brain just yet. It's a good theory, but it needs further examination. But showing it across genetic models of autism is an amazing start. Thanks for listening to this week, and I hope you understand a little bit more about how why amazing twins are helpful to understand what causes autism, and why animal models are so important to help inform what's going on in the human brain.